Hello, this is Allie.
So I am really excited about this particular episode because we are going to be covering and diving into a topic that we actually haven't touched upon. And, you know, for being a spiritual podcast and doing this for a year and a half, I'm a little surprised we actually haven't touched upon this topic, but we have been searching for an expert in this area. So we are going to dive into astrology, specifically something called soul path astrology. And we are going to hand this episode over to Deanna King because she's got some really incredible insights when it comes to this. I just want to briefly introduce what she does. Deanna is a soul path astrologer, but she's also a metaphysician, spiritual mentor, and an author. And her whole focus is to offer guidance to individuals as they navigate 3D and move into a more conscious path of living and raising their vibration, which is very similar to some of the work that me and Allie do. So with that, I'm just going to hand this over to Deanna. And, you know, at least for me, one of the first things I'm particularly interested in is what exactly is soul path astrology?
Thank you, Tiara. So for me, soul path astrology is me looking mostly at the north and south nodes in a birth chart, in a natal chart. And that tells me where your soul has come from and where it wants to go. And for me, I'm pretty inspired to help people move in the direction their soul wants to go. We generally want to stay where it's comfortable, where we've already learned a lot of lessons. We already have gained some gifts and talents. But our soul's goal is to continually be expanding and growing in places that we haven't touched on yet. And so sometimes we kind of get stuck in that south node energy, which is where we've already been. So since I'm kind of inspired, like you guys, to help people raise their vibration, and there's so much energy flowing into the planet right now, all the way the planets are moving and touching on each other, the aspects that have been happening for the last few years are pretty amazing to support everybody in this spiritual growth that we're going through. And that also shows up in the chart, just how it touches on all the points of your natal chart. But for the most part, the soul's journey is shown in the moon's nodes. That'd be the north and the south node in the chart.
So just so I understand, like, you know, I know a little bit about astrology. Like, I kind of dove into the aspects of the different planets and the south node and the north node when I was learning tarot, because I noticed that using astrology with tarot can be really helpful. And it actually really is. So when you say north node, you're talking about like where we're supposed to be going, like where we're headed in life, or like our mission and our focus.
Yeah, the north node is like where we want to head our GPS. We want to go that direction.
Okay.
Yeah, so whatever sign your north node is in is where you need to try to aim towards.
Mm.
Yeah, and so if you understand the signs, and of course if there's any planets in those two houses, that would also give us more information about how you're supposed to use those energies. So I don't know if you know about your own chart, what's going on there, and you want to speak to that.
Actually, can we do that? Like, if I just pull up my chart and share like what's there, because I was actually looking at my chart the other day. I was doing a read, like watching a YouTube reading, and this reader is just, she's so gifted. And she was telling, you know, me details about this specific information she was channeling. And she was like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the person watching might be a Taurus Venus. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Let me check my chart. Sure enough, my Venus is in Taurus. And it blew my mind that she was so intuitive. Okay, so I'm looking now and it says, oh, wow, my north node is also in Taurus. So what does that mean?
Tiara and I's both north node is in Taurus.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sure
so
we talked about it.
Is there anything in your south node house?
I'm pretty sure we're also both Pisces.
And south node.
Right, Pisces. Yeah, if you're Taurus North Node, then you're a Scorpio South Node.
Oh, Scorpio South Node.
Oh.
I knew it was a water sign. I just didn't remember which one.
Okay, I'm looking at this. I see North Node. I don't see South Node on here.
Sometimes the first part that I Yeah, did. Sometimes the South Node doesn't show up unless you tell the program that you specifically want it, but it's always exactly opposite your North Node. So do you have any other planets or angles in that South Node?
Well, the south node isn't showing on here, but it just says North Node in 16 degrees 8. Is that 8 feet? 16 degrees 8.
Okay. And what's your Venus?
My Venus is Taurus.
I know, but what's the degree?
Oh, I'm sorry. 13 degrees 3.
Okay, so it's basically conjunct your North Node. And the South Node, like I said, is in Scorpio. So do you have any planets in Scorpio?
All right, let's see here. Oh, my rising sign is Scorpio. As is my Pluto.
Okay.
As is my Saturn.
Wow, that's complicated.
Is it?
Well, Scorpio's a very powerful sign. And to have it on your rising sign, that's amazing. That's amazing. And so part of what you're doing, because that axis where you've got your first house and your seventh house, because the rising sign is your first house and the opposite sign is the descendant, which is your seventh house. So that means Taurus is on that cusp of your seventh house. And right. So that's the house. Those are the axis of service. Or excuse me, I have to say this differently. So your identity is on the rising sign and your relationships are on the seventh house, right? So there's the relationship with yourself in the first house, and then there's the relationship with the other in the seventh house. So since your South Node is in Scorpio near that first house, then you are actually moving away from more of a personal identity and building yourself. And your goal is to be cultivating and building how to be in relationships. Does that make
Interesting.
Sense?
Interesting. It does. Yes.
And with Venus there, then of course, Venus rules that seventh house. And Taurus is a sign that really speaks to the senses, the sensations. It loves, it's a very sensual sign, like it's stimulated by our body, all the things we can sense, the things we hear, we smell, mm-hmm. So perfumes and fabrics and
yes.
Maybe good high quality products, right? You probably prefer, like if we're talking relationship, you would prefer a very down to earth person, grounded earth sign Taurus, right? And maybe someone who has some kind of really grounded, practical morals, ways of operating. Maybe someone with money, because Taurus does rule our resources. That might be something that you really value, right? Venus is our values. And Taurus is also a fixed sign. Both Scorpio and Taurus are fixed signs, which means that they don't bend very well. They're pretty rigid. They like what they like, and that's it, how it is. Like, they don't change their mind very easy. They're not influenced by others. They're pretty focused on what they want and enjoy and like. And if they're going to change their mind, it has to be their own idea. So we call that a
Okay.
So what do you think so far? Is there a question or?
So far you're spot on, but I was going to say, particularly when it comes to like partners, I tend to gravitate towards the fire signs. I don't know why. I'm a Gemini sun. So I wonder if that has something to do with it. I'm not quite sure. I tend to gravitate. Like even my marriage was with a fire sign guy and he was super fiery. So I'm wondering, I was kind of curious about, is that related somehow, or is it just like, I don't know, a South Node thing?
It could be. So Scorpio, the one word that generally people use to describe Scorpio is intense. And so the reason for that is because Scorpio doesn't do anything superficial. They really like to get to the truth of the matter, to go as deep as possible, to uncover the hidden things.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's possible that for you, you're not satisfied with just anything boring. So, and that could be including your relationship, because your south node, where you're coming from, is you are used to intense. You're used to death.
Wow.
And so that might be why you gravitate towards partners that show you that. Now, fire is different than water, obviously. Scorpio is a water sign, but but it has some intense passion. Fire is passion, right?
Yes, it is.
So maybe that's partly why you're drawn to that. And I don't know what else is going on in your chart either.
Oh, there's a lot going on in my in my chart. Lots of water in my chart. And so, for example, my moon is in Cancer, Mercury Cancer, Mars Cancer. Mostly everything else is Scorpio. There's some Sagittarius and Taurus in there.
What house is your Libra?
So, like, Libra sign? Oh, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that on here.
Okay, yeah, you probably aren't quite sure what it looks like. But also the house, the eighth house, which would be the one just beyond Taurus for you, rules the sexual relationships that we have. And so that one sometimes has a lot to do with that passionate dynamic that we have, right? Because sex is one of those really passionate things that we share with another person.
Right.
And so it generally involves the partners that we're committed to, whether that's through marriage or just, you know, we've decided we're going to be partners. Not always. I mean, some people have more than one sexual partner. But generally it's those depths that we go to, which we go into through sex. Right. And Scorpio rules that eighth house.
Mm.
Yeah. And so your eighth house is going to be Gemini. Maybe that's why you attract Geminis.
I do attract Geminis, other Geminis, particularly Gemini women. And I've never understood what that was about. So that is super interesting.
So back to soul path astrology, part of my goal is to help people not waste their time, whether it's in relationship or business or personal endeavors. It's like, don't waste your time in the south node. Now, you can use all your south node gifts to help you. You know, it's part of your resume, basically. You don't want to just forget it. You want to use that to bump you up and shoot you into the north node. So, because all of that is stuff that you're really good at, but you just don't, especially when you get triggered, you don't want to head back to the south node and stay there. It's okay to kind of run back to that comfort zone for a little while. But know that really moving into the unknown territory of the north node is what your soul had intended. And it might be easier to do it in baby steps, you know, like, I don't know. I got to try to think about what would be a Taurus North node. Generally, it's about amassing your legacy. What are you creating for yourself in this life? And with it, you being in your seventh house, perhaps you're trying to find the right partner that you will be so proud of, and you'll have a reputation at some point for, having that kind of partner. Right.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah, Taurus rules our resources and also like our, in the world economy, it would be, you know, the food that we buy, the water we have, the utilities, so forth. It's like all those things that, the basic 3D things we need to live and survive, Taurus rules that. And then it rules the body. You know, it's an earth sign, but it's very body oriented. It's a little bit slow. Meaning it doesn't move fast like Gemini, it moves slow. It's the slow, steady pace that gets the goal. Taurus has a lot of patience. And so maybe you need to cultivate more patience in making your relationships work, in doing activities like being out in nature with your partner, doing things, sharing money, but in a way that serves you both and builds your legacy. And also, I want to say, like, creating goals together for amassing your savings that you're going to use for later in life, you know, just those basic needs. That's kind of a Taurus arena.
So that was a lot of very thorough information. And, you know, I'm really fascinated by astrology. And so, like, I know I could make excellent use of a lot of that. I'm curious to know how soul path astrology differs from other forms of astrology, because I've also had like Vedic astrology charts done. And, you know, my understanding is that the Vedic charts are like the more, they're Indian style, like Eastern style. And a lot of it, I didn't quite fully understand. So, you know, it seems like there's different types of astrology out there, but I'm curious to know how yours differs from some of those other ones out there.
So I use tropical, which is not Vedic, and it's the Western astrology. And then soul path is really just, I basically look at your natal chart and I see it just like the one you're looking at there, but I'm just focusing in, honing in. So it's just an extension. Like, I want to focus and hone in on your soul's journey from the south node to the north node. And so let's just say you were going to sign up to be one of my clients and you wanted some direction in life. And I don't know, what's something that's up for you, TR? What are you trying to build right now?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get my way back over to Colombia.
What's the purpose?
Actually, there's a little bit more to that. So I'm looking to build, I mean, obviously we want to build a spiritual community, but one of the things I've been looking at is getting into digital marketing as like a way to kind of fund my move. So I suppose we could use that too.
Are you moving because you want to grow who you are as a person, because you want to grow a business, because you just want to live there? Maybe you have family there. I mean, some of those things, the reason that you've been stimulated to move helps me understand like, why you might be signing up for an astrology reading. Most people want some kind of answer.
Yes, absolutely. I'm looking for a simpler lifestyle, much simpler lifestyle. You know, I'm trying to get away from the whole Western ideal around this hustle culture and working 9 to 5. And I burned out a couple of years ago. So, you know, I don't want to go back to that. I want to go to something simpler. I've been to Colombia, so, you know, I went there and I loved it. I made friends and connections, and it is a much simpler lifestyle. So I guess underpinning all of that is this desire to want something a little bit more simpler, more peace, more tranquility, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now that's totally Taurus. So you're right on track, because
Taurus
will live off the land. They want to make their own food. They want to grow their own food. They want to, maybe if you're eating animals, they would tan their own hides. They would do that kind of survival stuff that we used to do. And when you think about, if you compared that kind of living versus your south node, which is Scorpio, you could easily say that living in the modern world is an intense style of living.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so absolutely, that would be your Scorpio, right? So your soul is kind of saying, yes, we need to get back to the earth. We need to get back to the roots and simplify. Definitely. Now that I hear that, I can see how you're already being drawn to head towards that. Getting back to the basics with the land.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. To the point when, you know, Allie's lived in Colombia for six years on and off, and we both absolutely love the countryside out there, near, like, outside of Medellin. And I feel so, so drawn to it. Like, just, it's just so beautiful and green and lush and peaceful. And, you know, I never thought I would say I would prefer to live in the countryside, because I've always been a city girl, and it was always like, well, if I'm gonna go to the countryside, then it needs to be 30 minutes away from, like, you know, the closest fast food joint. But as I've, you know, grown and evolved, like, I don't know what it is. It's just the countryside seems so peaceful and preferable right now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also in my head, I'm like trying to look at your chart just based on the things. Guessing that you have Cancer in the midheaven at the top of your chart.
Midheaven. Hang on, let me look.
It would be
is
called
that the MC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Virgo. 1 degree 46.
Okay. So Virgo is also an earth sign. And that MC is the midheaven, is where it's kind of like where we build our legacy and our reputation, so that by the time we're done with our life, we can look back and say, oh, this is who I am and this is what I built. Sometimes it ends up being career, but, you know, a mother who's a mother, or she would be known for a very good mother. If Cancer were on the midheaven and she never had a career, she would be known for being an excellent mother, right? Yeah. By the time she was older. So with Virgo in the midheaven, so Virgo's earth sign, Taurus's earth sign, you've got harmony going on there, meaning that they support each other. So this is just one way that you can use your chart to, so, you know, like I just pointed out to you that whatever the reputation or the dreams or the goals or things that you might have in that career area are going to support your Taurus themes, your right. North themes as well. Now, if you had Cancer there, that would be what we call a square, and that would be a harder aspect, a challenging aspect, right? But you don't, so that's great. Lucky you.
So then, you know, prior, before we started recording, we had talked to you about how you have often worked with people who don't know their birth dates or like their time of birth, and use other methods to try to narrow in on that information. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Sure. It's really fascinating. It came up to me just a few months ago. So I find it very interesting that came up with you ladies as well. And I guess there are a fair amount of people who don't have access to their birth time. So I like to use kinesiology, which is a fancy word for muscle testing. And there's several different ways to do it. So basically the body itself has innate wisdom, and it doesn't have an ego. It doesn't have a logical mind. It's just pure energy that comes through and speaks. And I like to use the body as a pendulum. That's when I'm working with another person, that's the easiest way to teach them. And I can watch them. You know how a pendulum that you swing will just go backwards and forwards, right? So I just guide the person to use their own body as a pendulum. And basically I'm just talking to their body, and then we ask questions or make statements. And we literally let their body slightly lean forward. The person doesn't do it consciously. It just happens. It's like gravity pulls them forward for a yes. Gravity pulls them backwards for a no. And I've used that technique to narrow down the time frame, where you just keep asking the question of, when was I born? Was it between 1 and 3 a.m.? You know, and if you get a no, then you just change your times and you completely narrow it down, and you can find an exact time. And all it takes is trust and faith that this is a technique that works. And then once the chart is created off that birth time, you can affirm it by saying, oh, well, okay, you were born with your rising sign right here, and that's this quality, you know, whatever that sign is, these are the qualities. And the person will be like, well, yeah, that's me. Because basically the time of day you were born determines the rising sign. And that's what that is for, so that we know where the houses line up on the chart. Does that make sense?
It does. So I didn't realize that it was the time of birth that determines the rising sign.
Yeah, it's the time of birth. I believe the rising sign changes about every 30 minutes. Well, not the sign, but the degree. The degree changes. So, you know, that's why if you pull up your chart, let's say Allie pulls up her chart and she just punches in 6 a.m. But if she was born at 6 p.m., her rising sign could be in a completely different sign.
Oh, wow. So then how is that done remotely? Like the whole part, the muscle testing part, is that done remotely or is it done like you need to be observing this person? I'm fascinated by this. I didn't know this was something that could be done. But is it something you can just do like on the phone or just through a Zoom call?
I do it by Zoom because I like to watch the person's body so that I'm getting visual feedback. But yeah, I do it all online. I certainly could do it at home in person, but it's not very often that I work with people right in my neighborhood.
Wow. So I know you also have a book called Bringing Ceremony Home.
I do. I published this book last year. Part of my passion, again, is to help people on their awakening path. And so I like to teach people different techniques that they can use to facilitate their own growth and facilitate their own searching connection with spirit, really to not necessarily not necessarily count on other people to help them with that. Like Tarot, for example, is really fun and entertaining, but unless you learn how to do Tarot, you're always going to have to go back to another Tarot reader to get answers, right? So, I teach energy work, but this book was a combination of me seeing in my own chart. I have Gemini on the midheaven, which does include writing and speaking and publishing. And so I was thinking, okay, I'm going to be a writer. And so I'm like, I'm going to write a book. And I'd never written a book before. So I thought, well, the easiest thing for me to do, obviously, is to write about what I know. And the easiest book for me to really pull off, because my first one had to be easier. I knew I'd never do it again. But the easiest one for me was to write a book about doing ceremony, since I've been using ceremony very much in the past 10 years to not only connect me with spirit, but to give me a ritual or a practice that I could do with the new moon and the full moons that would really speak to my own personal journey, but also to my natal chart. Like, for example, if a moon was happening where it was aspecting my natal chart in a good way or possibly in a difficult way, then I would specifically do a ceremony to work with those energies, right? Calling in spirit and asking for an shift and an adjustment and ease. And, you know, there's lots of ways to invoke spirit, but I found it just very cathartic and empowering because, you know, we all have had many lifetimes and ritual and ceremony have been a part of our lifetimes. They're ancient. We know how to do it. We just forgot that we know how to do it. And so I wrote this book, Bringing Ceremony Home, which is really a very easy laid out to do manual, do it yourself, how to do ceremony at home. So it talks about setting up the sacred circle, the four directions, calling in the directions, a little bit about animal totems, if you want to call in animal spirits, how to write an invocation, which is the term for, it's kind of like prayer, but invocation is when you invoke spiritual beings in to support you for what you're doing. And so there's the opening, the process, and then the closing of the ceremony. And then there's examples in the back for all different ways that you would do ceremony, anywhere from personal growth to coming of age rituals or death and dying or birth, right? Or marriage, you know, those things that we celebrate. So there's lots of ways to use ceremony. And my goal was also to just, you know, if more people know how to use it and they get in touch with it again, they can use it by themselves or with groups of women. When you're intentionally trying to bring something in, some change, moon rituals. But I would love, wouldn't you guys love to see more people doing it every day or, you know, once a week, like having ceremony regularly, a regular part of their lives, maybe in Colombia,
you know, I was going to say, I'm going to be honest, like I have never really used ritual or ceremony. And I think for a lot of people, when they think of these concepts, they think of like witches and witches circles and like witchcraft and spells. And, you know, at least like in the United States, there seems to be that pop culture phenomenon around rituals. And so, you know, I think part of me kind of was like, well, I don't know if I want to go that route. But as you describe it, it does sound very impactful, especially when it comes to like the intention and, you know, sealing the intention. So I'm actually very, very curious about some of this ritual. And, you know, I actually would be curious to know more about ways ritual can be used even daily. Because again, I've never really incorporated ritual much into, you know, my routine, but I could see that benefit.
I bet you have. And it's interesting because the word ritual basically just means you do something regularly and you kind of access a presence, right? So sometimes just having your morning coffee is a ritual.
I see.
You know, you sit down and you're getting your Zen space. Obviously, meditating is a ritual. You know, if some people light a candle and they might have an altar because there's lots of different deities that people respect and honor. And, you know, I have a chair in my living room that I generally sit and I look at astrology every morning. That's part of my ritual. You know, I just like let myself be immersed. So I just want to share with you that the word ritual is very broad. It can be broad. It can be extremely spiritual. It can be more of the pagan style, which it kind of sounded like you were speaking to with spells and that sort of thing. Yes. It can just also be made up. You can create your own rituals, you know, basically whatever speaks to you that gets you into the state of presence. How do I want to say that? That maybe you like to do it every day. That's what makes it a ritual is you like to do it every day or regularly, right?
I was going to say that all makes a lot of sense. You know, being here in Colombia, like ayahuasca has taken off down here in Latin America. And so a lot of people there, like it's a tourism thing where people come down and want to do these 4 or 5 days of ayahuasca retreats. And it's people doing these because I've met so many people who have done them. And then I'll sit down and just have a conversation with them. And they are just like, going into something like that, I come out and I create better habits. And a lot of people don't really understand that a ritual can be something, as you had just mentioned, as a morning routine, just like getting up with the sun, doing breath work, having your morning coffee, and then starting your day, or going deep into meditation. And it's funny that some people kind of need a catalyst, like coming down here and doing something like an ayahuasca retreat to kind of open their eyes and their senses to being more present, or something that jump starts them to want to be more present. But once people actually experience being present and feeling all these things like at peace, like maybe you have a lot of anxiety and then you go and do something like ayahuasca and then you view life differently, or you realize, wow, I do need to be more present. I need to remove all of the noise. And I wish more people were educated and not so, I guess, close-minded around the idea of some of the terminology that's being used, especially throughout the New Age and spiritual community, because people hear certain words and they get these ideas and they're just like, oh, I want to steer clear of that or stay far away from that. But there's just a lot of communities down here that just really focus on doing different types of rituals, meditations to be present, like meditation or breath work or sound healing, ayahuasca. There's just so many ways to grounding, going to a park, connecting to nature. These are all things that can actually really help a person become more present in their day.
Right, right. And again, the model that this book was sort of written to, it speaks to a Native American medicine wheel, which is really just a circle. And for me, it's the circle has been used in sacred rites through many, many cultures for eons. You know, even when people gather around in a circle and hold hands, that's a sacred circle in itself. So it's sort of in our DNA. We like circles, right? You know, we like to be connected. And so in the sacred circle, the medicine wheel model is basically whatever size works for you. I like to make it big enough that myself can walk around in there at least 6 feet. So you could do it in your living room or you can do it outside. It's very much more impactful outside in nature. And sometimes you can create a sacred circle that would stay, right, with a few rocks, four rocks to mark each element, north, south, east, west. And then you've got, like astrology, you've got air, water, fire, earth, right? You've got the elements that you would bring into your circle. And so for me, you know, the creation itself of the circle is a ritual. It's a creative process. It's very feminine, where you're deciding what is going to be in my circle to define the circle. What's going to create the outside edge? What am I going to put in it? What am I calling in? Am I bringing in pictures of people I love? Am I bringing in symbols? You know, am I putting money in my circle? Am I putting affirmations, written things in there? Am I getting rid of something? So I'm putting that in the circle, you know? So it's this amazing creative process to create the circle. And it takes focus, kind of like meditation. It takes focus. You're definitely thinking about every little piece that you're putting in it because it's going to have an impact on the ritual, on the ceremony itself. And the different deities or spirit beings that you might call in are going to have a different impact on your ritual. So if you're trying to let go of someone and you're pissed, you might call in Kali, the goddess Kali, right? Because she's known for helping us access our anger and stand up for ourselves and have strong boundaries. If you want to have more compassion or have forgiveness for an event, you might call in Archangel Michael or, you know, some Mother Mary, something like that. And it also gives us an opportunity to call in our own spirit guides. Some people know who their spirit guides are, some don't. But if you don't, it doesn't matter. You just say, I'm calling in my spirit guides. So it's this beautiful opportunity to get in touch with spirit. You don't have to become altered. And I suggest people do it sober, completely sober, because we don't get to be completely sober very often and let ourselves play in the spiritual realm. Like, aside from church, and I'm not a very strong proponent of churches, just because of the rigidity and the box feeling of that, but I really want people to open their creativity and just remember their connection to spirit. Let it emerge. Mm-hmm. And ayahuasca is a great way for people who think they don't know how and they need something to bump start them. But once mm-hmm. you've seen or felt or experienced that bump start, you just get to take the ball and roll with it. You don't necessarily need that substance again.
It's really interesting because I've met a few people that, I mean, who've done it, who swear by it, but they keep going and going and going. Like, I know people who have gone 5-6 times by this point, or they'll sign up for a 5-day retreat and do like 10 doses over that 5-day retreat. And wow. It's like some people, it's almost like an addiction. It's like the only way that they feel that they know how to connect. And so... but also just some people just love it so much that they're just like, oh, I want more.
Yeah. I mean, my personal feeling is that ayahuasca is a sacred plant, and it was originally brought in for specialized purposes, not for entertainment purposes, not for recreational purposes, right? And it has an energy. It has a presence. It's probably a living being because it has been used so much in the before right. It became modernized. And to me, you're kind of screwing around. You're showing to me, it just seems like disrespect for that being and for the purpose of that origination of that plant and how it could help us reach realms that we weren't able to when we did try on our own. And, you know, modern culture, we are very much drawn to addictive things. That's just how we are now. It's like we want the instant fix. We don't want to do the work. So that in itself is just a shadow side. And I'm really curious, like if someone is doing ayahuasca that much, I want to see their chart. Cause I'm like, what kind of Scorpio do you have in there? You know? Because they're looking for something outside of themselves, number one, and they're looking for the quick fix. They're looking for, maybe the intense experience. And I personally have had extremely intense experiences on my own sober because I was willing to be vulnerable and taken myself. Mm. Right.
I love how you say that because I do feel like a lot of people do turn to substances. And I just know people who just can't get there sober. I know people who have tried to get there sober and they're just like, nothing's happening. And so then they give up. And so I feel like we as humans, I know that source lives inside all of us, but so many people are unable to tap into that power because of all their daily lives and all the noise surrounding them. So it's interesting how you do talk about, I fully agree. I do think the best way for the most clarity is sober, but so many people don't know how to tap into that. So do you have any like tips or recommendations on how people can get there sober?
Yeah. So we're really good at building walls, right? We're really good at protecting ourselves. Since we were little children, we learned how to, our ego has said, well, I might die if I do that again. So I'm going to protect myself in any way I can. And a lot of that means shutting down and not feeling. And it's a process to undo those layers of that onion, right? Of guarding, of protection. And I'm not a real strong proponent of talk therapy because I think it's just talking. It doesn't really ever get anywhere. There are a lot of techniques that help. You know, EFT tapping is great. I've used Compassion Key, which is just another heart-focused, compassionate technique to speak to the wounded child. You know, there's hypnotherapy, there's past life regression. There's just like so many things. And I think the most important thing, like this is back to, let's talk about kinesiology in itself. So people are like, I don't get answers from my spirit guides. Well, you can use kinesiology. It takes a little bit of time to, I guess, train yourself how to use it and trust what the answers you're getting. It takes a little bit of diligence, just like anything we do. But once you get it, you can basically ask questions just like you would to your spirit guides and get answers. Now, granted, you're only getting yes and no answers. So it has to be those kind of questions, but that's a start, right? And the first thing you could do is say, should I do ayahuasca? You know, and if you get a no, then it's like, okay, that's not where I'm going. And then your next question might be, am I using ayahuasca to hide from myself or from what I'm trying to do? And you'll get an answer. You know what I'm saying? So that's like one simple technique that we all could use just to start us on the path of how do I get my answers? And again, it's coming from your own body. It's not coming from another person. So it is self-empowering, right? It is your own wisdom. And then once you gain some trust in your own body, in your own wisdom, you have something to work with when you try something new. But you've got to start somewhere with that self-empowerment. And I think it's great to have peers too, because it's so much easier to take on a new thing when you've got a peer who's either doing it with you or they've already done it.
Exactly. I think that's really interesting that you bring up instant gratification, because that is really where we are in the modern day today. Like everything is at our fingertips, where people have shifted into instant gratification. And I feel like people have lost the ability to have patience. Mm-hmm. I feel like people have lost the ability to be able to, or even want to take like the longer road. Like because instant gratification has just been pushed forward so much that people just don't know how to like take a step backwards. Like everyone's just like, well, I want the answer now. And if I don't get the answer now, then the hell with it. I'm just going to move on to the next thing. And I feel like because like everything is just so rushed in everyone's lives, like everyone, you know, it's like we have bills to pay, we have work, and there's so much noise and there's so much distraction. It's just people don't know how to remove themselves from that and just be silent. Like take 5 minutes out of your day and be silent. And most people can't do it. Most people are just like, after 30 seconds, they'll look and think it's 5 minutes and then they'll be like, okay, I'm bored with this. And then they'll, you know, move on to the next thing in their day.
Yeah.
So I find that really interesting. So that's why I'm just like, I don't know if people can get to a place where they can do this sober. I think it's actually very hard for so many people.
I'm sad that that's what you believed, only because I'm like, here, I think I live in a little bubble, and the people that I know are dedicated, maybe is the word, driven to be sober in their body and continue to grow. Again, that's the other thing, is we came into this planet to be in a body. And when you're doing a drug or a drink or any substance, you're leaving your body. And that's all fine and good, but we were supposed to be in our body. So for me, and this is part of my soul path, right? And I cannot speak to anyone else's soul path. We all have a specialized one. But part of my soul path is to be in my body and to reach those higher planes and to access the esoteric world in my body. And in fact, I live in both worlds. I have a very, very vivid 12th house, which is the house of Pisces, but it's the hidden house, oh, but yeah. A very vivid other world. I live in two worlds at the same time because I'm seeing energy and I'm talking to you on a podcast. I am literally like in these two worlds inside my head, seeing and experiencing different things at the same time.
I am too. I definitely live in two worlds, and NTR knows that.
And I do think that people can do it sober. One of the very simple techniques that I teach is using a rose as a symbol. Like in your imagination, you just imagine a rose out in front of you. We all know what a rose looks like. And I like to make it big, like about, I don't know, 2 feet across. Just the bud of the rose. And a rose, if you think about it, they've been used in all sacred practices, in all religions. They're a divine flower. They're used in weddings for a reason. They're used on funerals for a reason. They have a very high vibration, the highest vibration of all the flowers. And I use a rose in my imagery work as a symbol, as a tool. It's sort of my magic wand in a way. And I put this rose above my head and say, for example, if I was feeling really anxious because today I was all ADD, all over the place. I was on my computer. I was on my phone. I was talking to these people. I was trying to do work and I was all over the place. I would just simply put the rose above my head and say, take out all the anxiety. And I would bring it down into my body and through my body down to the floor. And then I destroy the rose. And its purpose was to collect up all the anxiety. And you could do that over and over again and let that rose be your sponge. Now, that's just a simple technique. It literally would take you 2 minutes. You can do it for fear. You can do it for overthinking, you know, whatever your thing is that you don't want to be experiencing in the moment. And that's a self-empowering alchemical tool where you just healed yourself. You shifted your dynamic.
That is so fascinating.
That is. I haven't heard of the rose technique before, but that sounds very impactful.
Yeah, you could use any symbol you want. I just use a rose because of its high vibration, and everybody knows what it looks like. Everybody can call it up in their imagination.
Well, I'm so glad that you are dedicated to, you know, having those experiences and visualizations and realizations while sober, I'm going to be honest. Every time I've ever had that type of intense experience, I have been under the influence of something, like usually, whether that be marijuana or microdosing. Like usually there was something that kind of like was the catalyst to help me get to that stage. But I love that you're focusing on trying to get there naturally and without that intervention. I actually think that's very admirable. I feel like a lot of people, they either go for the substances or they don't think they can do it themselves. And you're a testament that it is possible. And, you know, I'm glad that you said that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And again, you know, there's more power in a group. So like, just put together a group and go, hey, you guys, let's be curious and just do it sober this time and see what happens. You know, it's easier to do it with a bunch of friends doing it with you where you're not the only one.
Right. Do you host those type of things?
I will. I can't say why I'm actually doing it, but I most definitely would. I have hosted some ceremonies in the past. I'm not doing that right now. I'm really focusing on my online practice to work with people online one-on-one. I do have a group Zoom call where I do guided visualizations, and that's twice a month. So if people want to get in touch with me via the links, then once they register with their email to just be on my email list, they'll get all the notices for those calls. Because I'm really just here to help people kind of awaken that inner creator, the inner magician, that inner part of us. It's really part of our inner child that knows how to play with energy and just begin to heal ourselves. We don't have to go to a healer. We don't have to take a ton of classes. It's like you just learn a few simple techniques like this rose one, and you can literally like clear away all the debris that's in your energetic space right now. Of course, it is important as well to fill yourself back up. And that's another technique that I teach, is to call all your energy back from everywhere that it's been, including your computer or your phone. So,
right.
So
Deanna, if someone wanted to work with you one-on-one or have a soul path reading done or learn more about your book, where could they find that information?
So my website is called 5dpath.fun. A lot of people are like, that's a website. Yeah, I actually, instead of .com, it's .fun, because you can do that now. You can name it anything you want. And I was totally all about, let's make it fun.
I
the spiritual path has to be fun or nobody's going to want to do it. And that's what I do. I teach how to have fun doing it. It's not going to be hard. Sure, when sometimes we look at those shadow aspects, there's a little bit of challenge there sometimes, but you got someone holding your hand, and really we need to let the inner child out to play. It's time to play. So again, 5dpath.fun, and I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and starting TikTok now. I have a YouTube channel with a whole bunch of guided visualizations. And almost all of them are 5D Path Fun. So just type that in and you'll find me there.
I absolutely love what you're building. And I just, we need more creators out there. We need, Tiara and I have found that in spirituality, there really needs to be a balance between like the truth about the journey. You know, we have noticed in the spiritual community, a lot of people really focus on love and light. And although that is definitely an aspect of it, the shadow piece that you're talking about, I absolutely fully agree with you. When it comes to the shadow piece, it is important that you find someone who can hold your hand through it or help you navigate that. Because I know people who try to do the shadow work on their own, and then that's when people typically start running from themselves, they run away from the journey, and then they won't come back and revisit it because they're just like, I tried it once, I didn't like it, I didn't want to go there, they didn't really have guidance, and they they won't come back to the journey. And I feel like this is where so many people are getting stuck. So I absolutely love that you are trying to find innovative ways to bring out that creativity and bring people together so you can hold their hand through it, because shadow work isn't easy, you guys. It is not. Anyone who tells you it's easy, they're lying. So I love what you're doing, and I just want to like give you props and say thank you for everything that you're building.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It does sometimes feels like a lonely journey. However, now that I'm working so much globally online, I'm just amazed at how many people I meet every day who are calling themselves, they're waking up. They've either been awake or they're waking up. And I'm fascinated by how quickly it's happening now. People are saying, oh, I've been awake for 3 months. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, that's fast, you know? For me, I was like painfully waiting for it to, like, when is it going to be that I feel like I'm awake? And I knew I was on the journey, but it was literally like 15 years, it seemed like, before I could say, yeah, I'm awake now. And I'm just fascinated, because to me, that just means there's so much celestial support, spiritual support for us all. And it happens in divine timing for each person as well. So trusting that timing and knowing that if it does happen quickly and you're going a little crazy because everything is upside down now, it's because your soul knew that you could handle it and you'd have people coming across your path to support you. And maybe that's why they find me. I don't know. But I'm just very hopeful. I meet all these people every day and talk to them. And it's inspiring to me to know that we are all making a difference. We are coming online. We are here to facilitate humanity's growth and empowered and inspired to do it the best that we can.
That's beautiful. And so, you know, this is very insightful conversation, and I know we covered a broad swath of topics. So again, Deanna, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with us today and for answering our questions and for diving into my chart. I hadn't really intended to bring up my chart, but I just thought, you know, why not? It might be interesting if people can kind of get a real world example of how some of the work you do is impactful and how it works. So I thank you for doing that as well.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for joining us, Deanna. For all of our listeners, we will put Deanna's information in the show notes. And if you guys want to reach out to her, or if you need to reach out to us, you guys know how to find us on our website. Our spiritual community is now officially open, and we hope to see all of you in there. And I hope everyone has a fantastic week.
Yes, thank you guys so much for joining us.